This is CliffCentral.com. CliffCentral.com on a Tuesday morning, the 10th of October. Let's get stuck into your day, shall we? Beautiful day across the northern parts of South Africa today after some very heavy rains. Everything's clear. There's water in the rivers. All the shit has washed away. The roads are clean.
Yeah, you know, like when the shit washes away, it washes away to someone else.
Yeah, it just goes downstream.
No, my ex is still around, so not all the shit is washed away. Checked in with him this morning. He's still around.
Why checked in?
Just I needed to make sure that it was wiped away. Yeah, huh? It was washed away. Not.
Does he live in this river?
All right, let's get into some news. Over to you, Mabs.
So the death of at least 118 psychiatric patients after being transferred from Life SDMeni to 27 other NGOs has been described as one of the greatest cause of human rights violations since the dawn of our democracy. This was according to advocate Dirk Groenewald, who gave an opening statement yesterday at an alternative dispute resolution hearing in Parktown. Now, the hearings, which are expected to take about 3 weeks, are going to allow the families of the deceased patients the opportunity to seek clarity as to what happened, and then also maybe a bit of justice where they feel that they were wronged. Groenewald said that the actions of the Gauteng Health Department in the matter had gone against the Constitution, South Africa's domestic laws, as well as international conventions when the department ended its contract with Life SDMeni and then transferred the patients to various NGOs throughout the province.
Yeah, they just moved around mentally ill people, psychiatric patients. They just moved them around and they put them in these facilities that weren't even registered facilities, where these people were basically abused or left to starve, left to die of thirst. The most inhumane, this is Nazi level. This is concentration camp level disregard for humanity. That's how bad it is. You know, a lot of people go, oh, Trump's as bad as Hitler. Well, this is as bad as Hitler. Because this is putting people into places where they were left to die. This is horrible. And you know what's weird about it? The person who was heading up the Gauteng Health Department, Daweni Mahlangu, she's not even on the list of people attending the hearing. She's not even there. Nobody knows where she is. How can she just not be held responsible? How does she get away with not being... Where is accountability? I mean, she should be there answering questions, right? She was the MEC, the minister, in the Gauteng provincial government. She was the person in charge. Doesn't it make sense she should be there? Anybody know when Daweni Mahlangu is? We need to know. People have died.
118.
People are dead. They are gone forever. Their families have still not been given a decent explanation as to what happened to their family, their loved ones. And Daweni Mahlangu is nowhere to be found? Are you telling me she doesn't even have the decency to attend these hearings? She's no longer MEC. But shouldn't she be there? Out of just a sense of comfort and humanity and decency. She should be there showing people that she's not a monster. This story, every time it comes up in the news, because I don't think about it all the time, but when I do, it makes me sick. These are not... This is like doing this to children, because these were patients who could not, in some circumstances, look after themselves at all. They couldn't go to the toilet on their own. They couldn't help themselves to food. They were incapable of looking after themselves in some time, some of the occasions, some of the patient's situations. Just treated like livestock. And not even livestock that you could profit from. Livestock that is diseased that you just want to get rid of. Ah, we'll just throw them into this supposed, in inverted commas, center that's being run by someone who wants a government tender. And they just get left in a room and then they die and everybody goes, oh, well. And when we talk about humanity and dignity and human rights and respect for each other, it starts with the weakest people. It doesn't start with the strongest ones. It doesn't start with the ones who can stand up for themselves. If you really care about that stuff, and we try as a South African society to convince ourselves we're good people, we have this really, really awesome constitution that guarantees us the right to live peacefully, democratically, and freely among each other. We have the right to participate in government and in business and in human social interactions in a meaningful way. And then this happens. And it makes all of that look like a big joke. And the person at the top of the Gauteng Health Department can't even be found. I don't think she has made any effort at all to right the wrongs that were carried out under her auspices. Do you understand when you go into government that you take responsibility for the decisions that are made by people under you? That's how it works. And if you don't get that, then you shouldn't be in government. And entirely apart from that, all of us in society are responsible for this in some way. Every last South African. Because these are our weakest. These are our most desperate people. The ones who can't even figure out the world around them. Psychiatric patients. If we can't look after them, the rest don't matter. Oh, it makes me sad.
Now, Henry van Breda's defense team is reaching a point where it may have to withdraw as their client is fast running out of funds.
Ah, there we go.
Oh.
This is according to his lawyer, advocate Pieter Boete, who said this in the Western Cape High Court yesterday. And this after the state asked for 2 days to prepare to cross-examine first defense witness, Dr. Antonel Olkers. Now, Dr. Olkers said that there is foreign DNA that has been found present at the van Breda crime scene, which doesn't seem to suggest that it belongs to any of the family members, Henry included. But this is after SAPS Forensic Sciences Laboratory results stated that there had been no foreign DNA. But Olkers has testified that samples analyzed by the SAPS lab from the van Breda crime scene did not meet the criteria in terms of standard operating procedures.
Sure.
The defense had received data of 151 samples, although the chief forensic analyst, Lieutenant Colonel Charlene Otto, testified that there had been 216 that were processed and tested. So it seems like the defense is saying, state, you did not do a good enough job of collecting DNA evidence because there was foreign DNA present there. So it is possible and likely that there must have been somebody else at the crime scene other than Henry. State is saying, no. We collected all these samples. There was no foreign DNA. And then defense, retorting and saying, yeah, but we question, you know, the standard of your operating procedures. And now the defense team are saying, and our client seems to be running out of funds, so we're reconsidering this whole entire thing as well.
Are you allowed to do that? I mean, is that ethical if you're a lawyer? If you take on a client and then they start running out of money and you're like, oh, well, we're going to drop you now like a hot potato. Is that right?
We need to hear from the lawyers. I mean, none of us are qualified to answer that question.
Yeah, well, I guess it's a service ultimately.
Yeah, aren't you just allowed like, okay, cool. No more money.
So it's like you don't pay your electricity, so we're just going to cut your electricity.
Mm. Yeah, because you know you haven't got like a contract deal. It's basically, this is my day rate. You're not going to go, okay, guys, look, here's 10 million. If I'm innocent, you get another 20. I don't think that's how these things get brokered.
Oh, I would need that. Like, I wonder how much you even get paid, though, as, you know, Henry's lawyer.
Well, we saw through Oscar's case, these guys are on up to 50 grand a day.
Yeah, you charge whatever you feel like.
Because you know your reputation as well is also on the line here.
Well, no, because lawyers win and lose cases all the time. Mm. And really? the only one to keep track are other lawyers.
But like a high profile case like this?
You yeah. want to be all over a high profile case because it's good for business. Mm-hmm. Then it means that everybody is looking at your law firm and thinking, ooh, I wonder how they're going to represent this person or how things are going to pan out. Yeah. And then if you happen to win that case, even better.
If you lose it.
But if it's a losing battle mm. like this, you can definitely pull the, oh, well, they ran out of funds.
Yeah. This is actually
we had it in the bag, but they mm-hmm. couldn't carry it on.
On the matter of the DNA, Dr. Olkers also said that SAPS laboratories are not accredited according to the South African National Accreditation System. This, however, is not a legal requirement in the country, but Olkers did say that the lack of accreditation means that it was not certified to have passed a standardized independent audit. So these DNA samples are now being brought into questions, and it all has to do with operating standards by our state facilities.
Sure. I met someone who's in forensics the other day, and she said it's hard. There aren't a lot of facilities that can do the things that we need to do to be able to catch bad guys. So it's not like CSI.
No, it's definitely nothing like CSI.
You know, it's about budgets and it's about equipment and it's about laboratories, and we don't have a lot of that. We don't even have a proper fingerprint database.
Oh.
They only put your fingerprints in if there's some reason that they need to collect your fingerprints. Otherwise, they won't know. There's no one to compare it to. It's kind of scary, right?
Well, I mean, that's at least one explanation as to why so many criminals get away with the things that they do in this country. It's because we don't have the proper facilities to keep them behind bars when it comes to evidence collected.
Someone just sent me a picture of the front cover of the latest You magazine, which says, money, power, and political prestige, why she could be President Winfrey in 2020.
Oh, okay,
President
then.
Oprah Winfrey.
Oprah. Nice, yeah. Little sideline job at You magazine, huh? Yes. See a freelancing on the side
President
here.
Oprah Winfrey in 2020.
Interesting.
I like that.
I wouldn't object, but these rumors are coming up again, you know.
Didn't she just do a story for 60 Minutes?
Mm,
so she's like a special correspondent for 60 Minutes about.
60 Minutes still going?
Yeah.
Not with the same guy, is it?
Well, yes, he's now basically the crypt keeper. But
like
yeah.
60 Minutes
that's why,
left.
That's why they're bringing in Oprah. They need some young blood. And you know, when you bring Oprah in as young blood, you've got the oldest man in the world hosting your show. But yeah, she was a special correspondent. She sat down at dinner with a whole lot of people, and they talked about the American political situation and why it's so polarized.
Mm. You have to admit it was a smart move on 60 Minutes' part to bring her in. Because in this divided climate, you want a familiar voice, an endearing personality that people, you know,
and Oprah's
trust.
Good. She's good at that stuff. I won't take that away from her. She's very good at it. So there we are. Oprah Winfrey may be heading into politics, according to that publication.
Mm.
Who knows? I don't know why anyone would want to go into politics. If you've got the life of Oprah Winfrey or Donald Trump, why would you want to go into a business or a job
ego.
Where you're accountable to people? No, no, no. Just live your life, right? Just live your life. There's so much exciting stuff to do.
But your life is so grand as it is. Don't you think that these people eventually get bored and they think, well, what could top this current existence?
Perhaps. Yeah, maybe you're right.
Being president.
And as Ben says, that's kind of ego, right?
Mm. Oh, I was listening to an interview by Jimmy Carter, President Jimmy Carter, and he was speaking about the fact that like he would not be able to run in this climate. Like if he ran for president, he would lose.
You would lose
because it's a totally different ballgame than it was back in the day.
You need to be a celebrity, and you need to appeal to the crazy people on either side. That's how you become president now. Because the smart people, most of the middle, kind of centrist people, have just left the political world. They're not interested anymore because they don't feel they're represented at all. They feel it's become a very bipolar situation. You're either left or you're right. And most centrists go, actually, I'm not into any of that stuff. I'm not, that doesn't make sense to me.
Like he was saying there were no red and blue states back in his day. And it's interesting how one of the biggest scandals that he faced, well, I say scandals in inverted commas, was the fact that he admitted that he was a born again Christian.
Uh-huh.
Like people couldn't handle that. They're like, a sitting president.
And he was from the South.
Admitting that.
And he was a Democrat. He was a Democrat from the South who believed in kind of social, you know, progressivism. And Jimmy Carter was, he wasn't necessarily a great president. Mm. I mean, he had to come in, you know, after Ford and before Reagan. So he was wedged in this place, this weird kind of limbo.
There was this hostage situation that he had to deal with.
And people didn't like the way he dealt with that either. But here's an interesting thing since we're talking about America. Causes of death in the USA, 2016.
Stress?
No. Murder by gun as a cause of death through the whole of 2016 in the US, 5,276. It sounds like a lot, right?
Mm-mm.
It's not that many. Prescription drug overdose, 6,686.
Sure.
Yeah, those housewives are popping pills like it's candy, man.
Right. All drug abuse, unintentional poisoning. I'm going up the list now. Drunk driving, 15,521. Blood infection. You don't see people screaming about banning cars like they want to ban guns now, right? Kidney failure, 19,631. You don't see people going, let's ban the kidney. Influenza. Yep, flu kills with pneumonia, obviously, kills 25,354 Americans in 2016. Alzheimer's disease, 42,943. Diabetes, 35,114. Lower respiratory disease, 65,000. Stroke, 61,000. Mm. Medical errors, 115,439.
That must keep a lot of lawyers busy.
That's right.
See, that is one. Oh.
Obesity.
That scares me so
much. Obesity. Remember, firearms is only 5,276. Obesity, 140,939 Americans died in last year because of obesity.
Ban the cheeseburger.
And you got people running around going, I'm healthy at every size. No, you're not, honey. 140,939 people dead from obesity. Tobacco kills 160,680 people. Cancer, generally, 271,640. Heart disease, 282,038. And the leading cause of death in the United States in 2016, abortion. 501,325.
But is it death?
Well, that's another discussion.
Well, for a second, I was like, what? How? And okay.
So there's something interesting to think about this morning.
So the biggest killer of people in America is people themselves.
Yes.
Because if you die from heart disease, kidney failure, obesity, you did something to your body that created that kind of a hostile environment, which subsequently ends up killing you.
Exactly. Yep. Take that, ISIS.
The real suicide bombers are living among us.
Yeah. They don't even need you.
Of course, they do everyone a favor by not taking everyone else with them. You know, you may have a terrible situation with obesity, but at least you're not killing everybody else around you. Although if you sit on them, that's a different story.
Oh.
Hey, this received a round of applause yesterday and made a lot of South Africans very happy. The murder and attempted murder case against an Eastern Cape woman who was arrested after she killed one man and wounded two others who she allegedly found raping her daughter has been struck off the roll.
Yay. Yeah,
the National,
that is good.
Yeah. The NPA declined to proceed with the case. According to them, they said that their chances of a successful prosecution were negligible. The woman had been out on 500 rand bail. Her 27-year-old daughter was gang raped by three men. And when the woman intervened during the incident, the men tried to overpower her, but she fought back, killing one and wounding two others. And as I understand it, those other two are going to be back in court facing charges. But as far as this woman is concerned, her case has now been struck off the roll. There was also a GoFundMe initiative that was set up by some people where a whole number of South Africans started depositing money into this account, and they've said that this money will then be given to this woman and her daughter for their psychological counseling and treatment that they have to undergo. So,
yeah, I heard a pretty sad side story to this. Mm-hmm. That the girl who notified this mother of her daughter getting raped was apparently the cousin of one of the rapists.
Oh.
She is now fearing for her life because it was because she said something. It made this mother go and kill one of the guys. So now all these tough guys, broken society, all that kind of stuff, they're now turning on this girl because she was apparently the rat.
Oh my God.
How screwed up have you got to be?
Yeah.
Is that now they're turning on this woman because obviously she's a single woman. So yeah, these tough men can do whatever they want. So now she's like feeling suicidal. She feels that her life's in jeopardy at any stage.
That's horrendous. Hmm. That's horrendous. Anyway, she should have stabbed all three of them.
Look, she would have if she could have.
I would have. I would have helped her.
It was a case of, what, three against one?
No. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, what a brave woman.
Absolutely.
Can I play you the Star Wars trailer, the new Star Wars? The Last Jedi movie comes out.
Okay, I saw a lot of buzz around that.
It comes out in December. The wait is over. And the Last Jedi trailer. I can only play you the sound because, unfortunately, we're not on video. But you can find it on the internet. Let me give you a taste of what's coming. All right, are you ready, Star Wars fans?
When I found you, I saw raw, untamed power. And beyond that, special.
Something inside me has always been there. But now it's awake. And I need help.
I know it's mostly music and it irritates the hell out of you, but this is just, even the music's cool.
Fire. It'll burn the First Order down. This is not going to go the way you think.
Someone to show me my place in all this.
God damn it, I love Star Wars. All right, so that's happening, what, 2 months from now? Damn.
Star Wars fans, do you not feel like they are now just stretching this way too thin?
Well, what else are we going to do?
Is the storyline still good to you?
Of course it is. Yeah. Ben?
That's the thing with good storylines, yeah? You can go prior, post, dig a bit in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when you've got really like good gin, you can make a variety of drinks.
Okay, it's as strong. Long as the gin
they're doing,
is still
they're doing
good
the same thing
the
with Game of Thrones. Apparently, they're going to do like a prequel and a whole thing. So,
it's George R. Martin. They've got his nuts for 100 years.
And how many Star Treks have there been? There have been ones where Spock is a child, and one where he's 1,000 years old. And you know,
look at the Hobbits and those Lord of the Rings.
They've now got ones that happened before and after. There's no end to this.
Twilight.
People love it.
That wasn't even a story.
No, but were they all good?
No. Not one of them. Not a single one. Because
I only relate with the Sex and the City movies.
But are you telling
and I wish they didn't do anymore.
Are you telling me you never enjoyed one of the Twilight movies?
No, Gareth. The most thing, or the one thing that I enjoyed the most about Twilight was back in the 5FM days when we would have guests read a paragraph from the books that were sent to us that stayed in the studio.
Yes.
And everybody read from that book. Fresh. Like all the big names that came on as I guess we'd make them read from the Twilight series. It was fun.
And none of them sounded like they were making it better.
Also, none of them sounded like that guy with the voice. With the annoying, irritating
Gilbert Gottfried.
Thank you very much.
Oh right, okay.
I mean,
well,
A friend of mine, she went to see Gilbert Gottfried performing stand up the other day. She posted a picture of him. She said she said that man is going straight to hell.
Oh, in what he says, not just how he says it.
Both.
Because I don't know why you don't like the way he sounds.
I think if I had to be stuck at a dinner table with him and Wanda Sykes, I would need
therapy.
Tons of it afterwards.
All right, what else is in the news?
Well, here's something that's like a bad Hollywood movie that's now real life. And this, I think, is like the definition of petty. So a businessman from Singapore discovered that his wife, well, her wife-to-be, as they were planning their wedding day, actually, was cheating on him. Uh-oh. So what did he decide to do after he hired a private investigator? He exposed his cheating wife on the day of their wedding, in front of everybody, by actually screening the footage that he captured with the help of a private investigator. Isn't this petty?
That's so trashy.
Oh my goodness. Reports state that before the wedding, the businessman, who has not been named, hired a private investigator, suspecting that his bride-to-be was already cheating on him, only to discover that all of his suspicions were actually right. They had followed the bride-to-be for a little over a month and captured the likes of her walking into a hotel room with a younger man. Dum, dum, dum. So the investigator handed the footage over to the businessman, expecting that, you know, he'd privately confront the fiance, call the wedding off. But to his surprise, the investigator himself was even invited to the wedding for a front row seat to this occasion. So while they were at the altar, there was a video clip which started off as like a going down memory lane, romantic trip situation. And it only ended off with the bride being exposed with, you know, the truth of this. So the bride was so embarrassed, she just ran off. She ran and she left the venue and really like hasn't really been seen ever since.
So they didn't actually tie the knot.
Absolutely not.
So you went ahead and spent all that money just to prove this point.
Petty.
Yeah, that's mean. You should reconsider the reason that you live and
reconsider the reason you live.
Yeah, but you should, if someone treats you this badly, if someone has this little respect for you, walk away from them. Getting revenge, you may think it's a good idea in that moment, but revenge, that's not going to help you. It's not going to make you feel better in the long run. It really isn't. It's the most pointless and to carry like that burden. Walk away. Save yourself the trouble. Some girl cheats on you. Some guy cheats on you. Just get away from them. They've already proven they don't care about you. Mm. What are you trying to do by embarrassing them or by getting your revenge? You're not going to change the fact that they don't care about you. And someone not caring is a position.
True. They've already said more than enough.
Right.
By proving that they don't
care.
What
do you want from them? Are you looking for acceptance? Are you looking for them to fall in love with you? What is it that's motivating you to do this? Get away from that person. They are bad for you.
Oof.
MoveOn.org.
It's also kind of bad for you. What? Teachers that want to have sex with you.
That's always bad.
What?
They say that, but I wish it had happened to me.
Mm. Well, Gareth, that's what we say now. But when you're a 15-year-old boy, should you really be, you know, in a relationship with your teacher? So this, again, the story comes up time and time again. Because in America, it's like a subculture of this. You get these women in their mid-20s preying on these young boys. But now in England, there's a bit of an uproar. Because a 23-year-old teacher, Alice McBrett Briety.
Who?
Where is this again?
England.
Okay.
Alice, saucy old Alice. Yeah. She's actually 23. She's not old at all. So she's been preying on this young boy, 15 years old. They had sex in a hotel, in a car, in the parents' house.
Oh. Mm.
Of course, he's getting high fives for days at school, but she is now going to be in jail for 16 months.
Mm.
So another guy, Adam Johnson, he had supposedly consensual sex with a 15-year-old girl. He's in jail for 72 months.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
I don't know how I feel about that. Because if law's a law.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Alice, she's in there for 16, and creepy Adam, 72. Kind of feels okay, but is this fair?
Well, I mean...
Because either way, they're tainting minors. Are male minors less taintable?
Yes, because 15-year-old male minors have had fantasies about having sex with their teachers.
But what if a 15-year-old girl's got a fantasy with her teacher?
And a lot of them do too. Ooh. Oh, yes. Oh,
wait, yeah. But what's the legal age? 16, right, is a legal age. We don't know what it is in England.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think it's also 16.
I think, yeah, 15 is, I don't know, that just feels wrong.
But we all had that teacher, right? A friend of mine just reminded me, like, we had this teacher. She used to teach us causa back in the day.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah, like, it's all about her.
I'm helping you out, okay? Okay.
Your teacher was a fucking useless teacher. And, like, everyone used to do this purely because of her. I mean, we were the most useless language students ever, yeah. As you can tell by me being a prime example of this.
Yes.
And everyone used to fantasize about this kind of stuff.
Mm.
Back then, okay, I mean, I don't know if anyone hooked up with her. Some guys claim to, like older kids.
Mm-hmm.
But she wouldn't have gone to jail. I reckon she wouldn't even be fired. But nowadays, it's like these women who get into teaching for old reasons, like molesting boys, they can't do it anymore.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I suppose, I don't know.
If you were the one who wanted it, like you were building it up in your head and I'm sure you wouldn't mind. But... just in general? No, like just don't.
No,
do
I mean, it sounds from the story that in both cases, although you could argue, can a 15-year-old really knowingly consent to having sex? And I suppose that's part of the argument. But in both these instances, they say that the 15-year-old boy and the 15-year-old girl both consented to having sex with these teachers.
Mm.
But the punishment for the male teacher is a lot more severe than that of teacher.
I don't care what the law says. Like, the law could say that 16 is legal. The law could say 18 is legal. The law could say that 14 is legal. And there are countries where you can get married
or
to a girl.
Or you could just be French.
You can get married to a girl at 9 in some countries. I mean, to me, the number is just completely irrelevant. What it is about, it's about predatory behavior. If you are forcing, if you're using power to get sex from someone, particularly someone who is a minor or who is mentally ill or who doesn't want to be there and you have power over them, you have control over them, you know, you force yourself into their life, you force yourself onto them, whether it's like Bill Cosby did with drugs or whether it's by force like rapists do. Or whether it's because you are their teacher, their priest.
Smart, Gareth, smart.
Or their uncle. To me, this is just, that's where it's wrong. It's just wrong.
You're influencing people to do things they might not ordinarily do.
Consenting adults can do whatever the hell they want to each other. I'm open-minded as you could possibly imagine when it comes to that. Don't worry about those people. If they're consenting adults, they can get away with anything to that effect. Don't hurt each other.
I hear you. Once again, my favorite phrase. But on a minor scale, speaking on behalf of a friend, some people might be into that, a little power play, a little, oh, hey, dear.
Yeah, sure. Between consenting adults, if it's a play, if it's a game thing, that's fine. But the minute you are coercing, the minute you are taking away that person's right to decide, whether it's a man or a woman or a teacher or a student or anything else, the moment there isn't equal agency on both sides of the equation, it is not fun anymore.
Well, look, to simplify matters, what the law is saying is that you are entrusted as a teacher to protect a child's needs and develop them. going down in them is not part of that.
No, even even in sex ed, that is definitely not part of.
That's what it comes down to. It's like you can be consenting is all you want, and a lot of these cases come down to the fact that these little boys go, "Ah, but I love her," because you know they're obviously told to do that.
Yeah,
but they've been entrusted to educate. Not fornicate.
Yeah, you like, what are you doing having sex with your learners?
What if
stop
you're
it.
Educating me in more ways than one? I'm sorry. Never mind.
I mean, I think Sia had some fantasies about school teachers.
Okay, do you know why? Because
yeah.
Our high school had this apprentice program that they used to run. So for some boys who used
there
to...
Here it comes, everybody.
No.
Brace yourselves. Sia's about to make a revelation. Go on.
Nothing happened. But for some boys who wanted to become teachers or wanted to take a few years off and didn't know what they wanted to do, they'd come back like literally a year after matriculating as teachers. So someone who, you know, you used to see in the change rooms is now, you know, standing in front of you with the meter long ruler saying, hey,
meter long.
So about those protons and neutrons.
Wow.
Yeah. Your mind would escape and run away.
You are definitely a nasty hoe. Like you're a hoe. You're a hoe.
So I am speaking.
Shame. I went to an all-girl school. The majority of our teachers were women, and the very few male teachers that we had were old, overweight, with beards. There was no opportunity
before beards were cool
to have those kinds of fantasies with any of them.
But wasn't it weird? Didn't you have at least like that one? Where
no, not a single one.
No, she would have told.
Just that. Like if push comes to shove, out of this crop, I would.
Not even one.
Mm. Nah. We had a teacher. There were rumors about this one teacher that she had been sleeping with one of the guys in matric.
Oh.
I don't know whether it was ever true, but I liked the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of Mrs. Robinson type thing. Again, you shouldn't use your power to coerce someone into sex. Mm. But as Sia also points out, there are these people who have this power thing that turns them on, either because they're the victim or because they're the aggressor.
If Stacey's mom has got it going on, then hey,
I suppose that's why they. I suppose that's why they say that. You know, it when they try these things, that there is a legal age, or that there is an age of consent, and that there is consent, that you must be able to prove that there was consent. There can't be duress. You can't force someone in. You can't try and convince them, or lure them, or coax them, or coerce them. I think that it would turn me the hell off to be in a situation where I didn't have agency, or where I felt like I was taking away someone else's. It would turn me off. If that person isn't willing, what the hell do you want to do there?
Mm.
It's such a turn off. That's like you go in for the kiss and then she turns away.
Mm.
You don't want to be there.
Oh, so Gareth reliving his youth.
Oh.
No, reliving. Oh. reliving just any kind. To me, that's a kind of rejection. If someone doesn't want to have sex with you, the worst thing you can do is try to see it through.
Yeah.
It takes away all the desire. Right? I can't be the only one who feels
person.
It.
Yeah, no, well, of course not.
Sure. All right, let's just return to Gilbert Gottfried, because someone sent me this extract. It appears that Gilbert Gottfried's voice is an act. It was on Saturday night in the 1980s, Saturday Night Live. He did a series of interviews, and he would often alternate between his trademark annoying whine and a rather normal speaking voice, depending on the seriousness of the questions. As his career never moved beyond bit parts in films with him using that voice, he stayed in it. It's customary to believe that his speech pattern is how Mr. Gottfried really talks. It is not. It is an affectation.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's not how he really sounds all the time.
I wonder if it hurts his throat, though. It's
yes,
really...
and I hope it does.
It's a terrible sound.
Gilbert Gottfried. Here's the voice. He's hitting a bong at some party.
Of course he is.
What kind of crowd is this?
And she's blowing him, and then the son joins him, and he's fucking his mother.
All right, yeah, there's Gilbert Gottfried. What's the story there? What's going on?
we have a caller wanting to tell a story about their teacher.
Uh-oh.
And there it is. The only reason I brought that story up today, I was trying to lure some truths out.
All right, go on. Yes, good morning, Anonymous.
Morning, guys. So I went to school in Grantown, and it was an art school, and textiles was one of my subjects. So the class setup was sort of these huge desks, but it was set up in a U-shape. And the teacher would always walk on the inside of this U-shaped desk, and obviously, you'll be drawing, and then you'll call her over because you can't get this one flower right or whatever. And she'll be leaning over the desk. But the thing is, she never wore a bra or any other undergarment. And you were able to look all the way down. Now, you can imagine for a 15-year-old to see titties and that at that age was just absolutely wonderful. And then in my matric year, we had a teacher that did the singing classes and whatnot, and right at the end of the year, the teachers were supposed to dress like school kids, and we were supposed to dress like the teachers. And at that time, I also got chased out of the hostel because of shit that I made, and I had to study in the deputy principal's office, and she came walking in school clothes. She said to me, "You know what? Now I am a school kid, same as you. So, what do you think? Are we going to get it on?"
Ooh!
Carry on.
Okay.
Absolutely fucking beautiful. In the deputy headmaster's office. Anyway, thought I'd share that with you.
So you banged her?
What?
You banged her?
Maybe she's still there. Maybe people will recognize my voice. So I'm going to deny the fact that I did not deny her. I'm not saying that you can use your imagination. I mean, she's a school kid.
Okay, I'll say it for you. Yes, you did.
All right, nice work, dude. Well, there we go. Well, I mean, well done to you. You had your fun. But she didn't force you. You didn't force her.
No, I mean, I was in the sixth. We were writing final exams. I mean, come on. And, you know, she was like, I think, 22 or 23. Between 18 and 23, there's no real big difference. I mean, if I was finished with school and she was 23, that's sort of acceptable, isn't it? And then I would have only been 19 years old. I don't know what the fuss is about. That is still okay. At 15, 14, yeah, you don't really have brains at that age. Then it's a manipulative thing, I think. But at 18 years old, I mean, yeah, come on. That's not so bad.
All right. Well, I mean, it does sound like a sexy story, man.
Yeah. Shot, guys.
All right. Thanks, dude.
Anyway, bye.
All right. Okay, very nice.
People have lived.
Yeah, they've lived. See, this is why government schooling is not the worst thing in the world.
I say, yeah. Actually, I agree.
When are you guys going to play the clip of Mabali singing like those crazy terrorists?
We're not.
Oh, yes. I've got it. Don't worry. I got it. I'll get to it. That's from Ryan. Star Wars is lame, says Lionel. I would rather shoot myself in the dick than sit through another Star Wars movie. Well,
Lionel, doesn't sound like you got much of a dick to start with, if that's your attitude.
Another Ryan says, guys, I have to vent. I just went onto the Vodacom app and I saw that my airtime is about to expire at the end of next month. What? So I phoned them at Vodacom. I asked them about it. Apparently your eight time?
Airtime.
Okay. Airtime expires after 6 months. What corporate bullshit theft and lunacy is this? When I go to the shops and buy cornflakes, if it expires after 6 months, neither Pick and Pay nor Kellogg's come back to me and take away my expired box. When I buy a car, the dealership doesn't come back to me after 10 years and take it back because it's old. Is there a way to launch a civil case against them? I've had it with this blatant theft. That's from Ryan. Gareth, on your advisement, who's this now? Let me just read the name first. Carl says, I started watching Curb Your Enthusiasm. Oh my God, it is comedy genius. I had wet pants. I was crying. Well, my buddy watched the first episode of Curb the other day. Didn't you love it?
Yeah, JV Smoove is
the best.
I'd like to hang out with him for exactly 1 week. And then
exactly.
That's it.
Yeah. Otherwise, it would be too much for you after.
Yeah, no.
You'd go crazy. But what a show. All right, and then a lot of people talking about Gilbert Gottfried. Alice, who is Alice, says Carl. Where the hell were those teachers when I was at school, says Vinny. All I had for teachers was those old-ass dragons. Jeez, man, I would have anything. I wouldn't have said anything to anyone. And like Karen or Karen from Will and Grace, very odd to hear without the character voice. Hope you're watching the new season.
Yes, that's actually true.
All right. Very good. Should we bring Run in here? Let's talk about cryptocurrency. Remember the other day we had Run in for the first time and we started a conversation about cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. And then Rich Mulholland was involved in the conversation, so we didn't even get to finish it. And we thought every week or every couple of weeks, there's a good reason to talk about this stuff. And there are a lot of people who are fascinated by it. So I thought, well, why the hell not? Let's get Run in here. He did so well last time, and we love his show on CNBC. So let's talk to the dude. Let's see what he's up to this morning. By the way, you can call us on 0861-555-189. You don't have to admit teacher stories. You can call in with something more civilized if you'd like.
But you could, or if you'd like to.
No, of course you can. Or you can WhatsApp us on 0797482090. That's the number. Got it?
Yebo.
All right. Awesome. Let's welcome to the studio Run Neuner. He is the... he's the man when it comes to figuring out cryptocurrency. We had him in here the other day, and he started the conversation for us. It's time to take it up a level. Here he is. Good morning, Ran. How are you, sir?
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Let me just switch on your microphone. That might help both of us. There we go. How's it?
Good morning. Nice to be here again.
Lovely, man. Yeah, good to see you.
I'm glad we're not talking about teacher stories. I'm glad we shifted the conversation.
Did you didn't have any hot teachers at school with you?
Well, let's shift the conversation. And let's talk about cryptocurrencies.
Really? Not one. Because we had maybe one or two teachers. There was one who was pretty damn hot.
I had a whole lot of teacher crushes at school.
But I think that's every kid, because you look up to them, right?
Yeah, sure.
It's almost like, again, that's a power thing. All right, let's talk about cryptocurrencies, because Bitcoin went to a one-month high, and then people started warning about some upcoming event, and then it hit this, wasn't it Monday?
This Monday?
It hit some kind of a high on a rally over the weekend, and then... there was that crackdown. No, this is a while ago. Then there was that crackdown in China.
Yeah, so the long and the short of it is China banned, first they banned what they called ICOs, which is these initial coin offerings.
Right.
And then two or three days later, they came back and they said, it's not only ICOs, it's actually we're banning trading in cryptocurrencies. And
they
did what China does, and China just banned cryptocurrencies.
And I remember you saying that a lot of the mining of these cryptocurrencies goes on there.
Yes.
So if they ban it, those people there will stop, because what's the benefit to them?
So the Chinese are quite smart. So you got to understand what they're doing here. They're scared that money's going to leave the country, or there's going to be money laundering. So they said, look, no more trading in cryptocurrencies, because that's relatively anonymous. You can get away. You can send bitcoins overseas in a flash. But the mining of I don't think that they would ban the mining, because the mining is a net income generator for China, mm-hmm. because they use power and they use computing power and data
right.
to create bitcoins in China. And then you can still take that bucket of bitcoins that you get by mining, and you can sell it on what they call the over-the-counter market, which is not actually an exchange. It's dealers who buy and sell Bitcoin.
Huh?
So I doubt that they would actually ban mining of bitcoins, because that's a net income generator, and they kind of know where all the coins are, and there shouldn't be a problem. If the rumors are true, on the 10th of October or the 12th of October, Bitcoin trading is coming back to China. With some new regulations
could be
on the exchanges.
Today.
Yeah, if the rumors are true, there's been a few articles that came out that said that Bitcoin trading may actually come back to China.
Hmm.
And if that happens, that's a game changer. Yeah.
So would you advise, speculators might want to buy?
So the Bitcoin is having an unbelievable, unbelievable run now. And it's having an unbelievable run because of a brand new concept in the world, let alone in cryptocurrencies. And the concept is what you call a chain split. So I don't know how much you know, and I think I'll take a step back for the listeners. So how the blockchain works is that every transaction has almost what you call a date and timestamp, and is stored mm-hmm. in this chain. So imagine if all transactions are stored in one chain. But what happens, and these transactions are all confirmed by these people called miners. So mining is actually just a term for computers that confirm transactions on the blockchain network.
Correct.
In its simplest form. But what happens when the community disagrees? What happens if you've got, say, 1,000 miners or people in the community, and they disagree? They disagree about the direction that Bitcoin should take. So they have these public fights all over Twitter and Reddit and all the other chat forums. And then they decide they're going to split. So they decide, look, we can't agree.
And so you have Bitcoin A and Bitcoin B.
You have Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash, for example, which is, which is. So let me take it back to the last split. So when there was the last chain split that happened, they had this massive argument on all the public forums between all the big Bitcoin players, Roger Ver, Wu Jihan, and all these big Bitcoin players, people that own or mine a whole lot of Bitcoins. And they had this big public argument about scaling of Bitcoin. So, why is that important? Because if Bitcoin's going to have mass adoption and you're going to be able to buy coffee in a store using your Bitcoin or buy clothes in a store using your Bitcoin, then you need to be able to process a lot of transactions quickly. Because imagine you buy coffee, but it takes 24 hours to pay the merchant. That's not going to work.
No.
So what happened? So there was one school of thought that said, let's increase the block sizes. Let's not get into the technicals, but increase block sizes really means that you can process more transactions.
Okay.
So, again, just to take a step back for the listeners, Bitcoin blocks are mined every 10 minutes. In other words, they accumulate all the transactions, they put it into a bucket, and after 10 minutes, they release the bucket. But what happens if the bucket's full? That means that you have to wait for the next bucket. And what happens if the bucket's still full?
And people don't want to wait because what if they have to do that transaction there and then?
Correct.
You can't have your credit card declined.
You can't walk into Hugo Boss today and swipe and the guy makes you stand there for 45 minutes to just so that your Bitcoin – so that didn't work. So there was one school of thought that said, let's increase the block sizes to make this thing more mainstream and more transactive. And there were the core developers who said, no, let's not increase block sizes and let's introduce some other kind of software which actually sits off the chain and we'll do this thing called technical netting. Let's not get into the details. So they couldn't agree and they couldn't agree and they couldn't agree. And they kind of set themselves a deadline where they said, if we can't agree, then the chain is going to split. We're going to take this one chain, which is what we call Bitcoin, and we're going to split it into two. And those who want to support the old system must support the old system. And those that want to support the new system must support the new system. Okay. And the whole
seems
market.
Seems fairly democratic.
Yeah. It's actually more than democratic. And that's what I want to talk about. When it happened the last time, the whole market panicked. The price of Bitcoin went down. And everyone thought it's the end of Bitcoin because the developers can't agree. But then what happened was when the chain split, every person that held a Bitcoin got a free Bitcoin Cash token. Bitcoin price went to an all-time high.
Yeah.
And Bitcoin Cash went to $600 or $700 or even $1,000 at one point. So you got two coins. And so this introduces this new concept in blockchain, which kind of says that if you follow a chain and then you get to a point where you don't agree with what the chain is doing, you can split off that chain. You can go and compete with that chain, but you're still a stakeholder in both chains.
Huh. So you almost double your value every time there's a split.
So just understand what that means for society. It means that you'll follow a chain until a certain point, until you believe that you can do something bigger, better. And then you can rally support. You can go off the chain. You can still keep your initial holding and you get your new holding, which means that it's no longer one man's gain is another man's loss. It means that
everyone
gains.
Imagine
what that means for the progression of society. It means that the more smart people split off the chain, the more money everybody makes.
I love that. Imagine if we could do that ideologically. Imagine if we could do that politically.
Well, this is exactly
it. You have people who disagree. So, okay, well, you get to keep one foot in the current system, but you get to experiment in the new idea.
And take everything that you've got with you.
And you lose nothing.
You lose nothing.
You're not putting it all on black or red.
So this is what
you're putting it all on black and red, and it's going to end up on both, perhaps.
Correct. And if it lands up on, yeah, it
sounds too good to be true.
Well, this is what the blockchain does.
What does that mean for scarcity, though?
It doesn't. It just means that more people can create more ideas that add more value to society using the old idea as a base. And if it doesn't work, well, you've still got the original chain. It does mean that the chain may become, you know, if you've got 100 miners mining a chain and it splits, you may have 50-50.
Yeah,
but I mean, you're still mining the chain. There's still,
and then those numbers will accumulate as well.
Exactly.
So it could end up being like a tree.
Yes.
That so just now, keeps on splitting and splitting and splitting. And
so
splitting.
Why is Bitcoin at an all-time high today? Well, not an all-time high. It's almost at an all-time high. It's at about $4,800.
Yeah.
The last high was about $5,000. But people have realized that every time this chain splits, they get more free tokens, and they back more ventures than just the original venture. And they, someone, a guy called Spencer Bogart, wrote this article called An Airdrop. And what he said is, instead of launching all these new ICOs from scratch, just split the Bitcoin network. Split an existing network. Why start from the beginning? Rather ride the network until where it is today and then split it. So we've got two splits coming up now. One of them is what they call a friendly split, and one of them is what they call an unfriendly split.
Okay.
So the one that's a friendly split is a bunch of people have got this thing called Bitcoin Gold. And Bitcoin Gold is arguably a dividend policy in Bitcoin. What they're saying is, look, if you've held your Bitcoin for so long, you don't get dividends out of Bitcoin, but we're going to create this new coin called Bitcoin Gold, which you can mine in a different way. I'm not going to get into the technicals, but you can mine it in a different way. So everyone's going, look, if I hold Bitcoin, I'm going to get these free Bitcoin Gold coins. So everybody's running into Bitcoin, and that's the friendly fork. And then on the 25th of November, somewhere between the 18th and 25th of November, there's going to be a hard fork. And the hard fork is the community's fighting again. Mm-hmm. So these Bitcoin people, this decentralized community, they came to an agreement in New York about the scaling proposal of Bitcoin. And unfortunately, some of the miners now don't agree to stick to the agreement. And so the Bitcoin chain will most probably split again sometime around the 20th of November. And so if you hold Bitcoin on the 20th of November, you'll probably get Bitcoin 2X coins or whatever they called them at the time. So that's all the talk now in the Bitcoin community. This new thing of chain splits.
Now it's been very volatile this year, right?
Every year.
Okay, so in other words, this is not a market for people who want to see slow, gradual.
Cryptocurrency is volatile. I'm actually just switching on my laptop because I saved something for you guys. But if I look at the top performing coin this year, it's a coin called NEO. Now NEO is the Chinese version of a coin called Ethereum. It's domiciled in China, and it's actually its own blockchain.
Ethereum is Russian, right?
Ethereum is it's decentralized, but the founder is a Russian Canadian. He lives in Canada and he was born in Russia. And I'm looking at NEO now. So NEO has had a 21,430% return since the 1st of January. Yeah, there's another called EMC Squared, which has had a 7,271% return. And so the list goes down. A coin called DGB, which has had a 4,640% return this year since the 1st of January. So if any of my stockbroking friends are listening or my hedge fund friends are listening, I don't know if you want to call in and maybe share some of your returns that you've made on the JSE this year and see if we can compare them.
It's not going to be near that. Good as it is, it's not going to be anywhere near that. Do you think it's worth buying at this expensive price, though?
Depends what your – so first of all, if you're going to buy, do the homework. Don't buy just to play red or black, like you say. Buy stuff that you really – understand it before you buy it or give it to a money manager who
– And there are different things you could buy here. You're not buying the same thing. You know, like you're saying, you could buy NEO, you could buy Ethereum, you could buy Bitcoin.
So today there are 1,200 or 1,300 coins on exchanges that trade today, which is quite funny. If you look at the total market cap in cryptocurrencies today, it's $151 billion. Now, if I looked at that market cap in January, I stand to be corrected, but I think it was about $40 billion. So it's huge, huge, huge growth. In fact, I don't know if there's ever been an asset class which has given these kind of returns.
Do you think that because there are a lot of people who say, oh no, well, it's a thing, it's a fad, it's not going to last. The thing isn't based on any kind of real world value. It's going to collapse. What do you say to those people? Because you hear them, you've met them.
I say that they don't know what they're talking about. I lived through the internet.com bubble. In fact, I was a stockbroker at the time, and I saw what happened then, and there were all the skeptics about, you know, we'll never be able to transact on the internet. Oh, never, never, never. Today, we do most of our transacting off the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I understand both technologies, and I understand the blockchain technology. And my understanding of the blockchain technology says to me that this is the biggest thing that's ever going to happen to our generation. It's the revolution is bigger than the internet revolution. And I'm not sure if I've said this to you before, but I'm going to repeat it. If you look at the internet revolution, all the internet revolution was a good way or a better way to share content. The internet enabled us to share content. The internet is not transactive. In fact, when you do buy something on the internet, you view the content, the catalog on the internet. But the transaction actually happens in a box in a bank off the internet. So you give your credit card details, it goes into the bank server. The difference between the internet revolution and the blockchain revolution is that the blockchain is completely transactive and decentralized no matter where you are in the world. Every action that you make on the blockchain can reward you or charge you in tokens.
And I love the fact that there is no government in control of this.
Yeah, there's no government. You can control it. There are pros and cons to that. And I know the blockchain community will shoot me down for this. But no government means no regulation, which means that at the moment there are quite a lot of scams.
And there are a lot of people who are laundering money.
Correct.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's the con to this whole thing. And I'm sure that what we'll do is we'll get self-regulation. And I think that there'll become ratings companies on the blockchain, which will rate tokens. And then you can read the research reports and decide whether or not you want to invest in them based on research that people have done. And you'll find the Moody's and the Fitch of the blockchain coming up very soon.
Are we going to start? I don't have any. I've got that little bit that Vinnie Lingham gave me a while ago. But should I start getting into this?
So what I think we should do, I think the best thing to do is let me start a Cliff Central portfolio, which I'll make available on the Twitter, on the website, or whatever else.
Yeah.
What I'll do is today when I get home, I'll open an account. We'll call the account cliffcentral.com.
Okay.
We'll put money in the account.
Okay.
And then what I'll do is I'll keep posting updates as to why I'm doing what I'm doing for that account. So every time that I make a transaction, what I'll do is I'll update it on my Twitter or your Twitter or
we'll keep people informed.
And at the same time,
we'll track it.
And what we'll do is we'll tell them why we're doing what we're doing. And hopefully we'll get an educational point, to educate people as to why we're buying something. So before I buy something, I'll say, look, I'm buying Bitcoin today because I want to get the coins from the fork. And maybe we can talk about what the fork is. Or I'm selling Bitcoin today because I think it's had a hell of a run. So I'm kind of putting my head on the block because if I don't perform well, then I'm going to look like a monkey. But
everyone will see.
everyone will see.
You're not afraid of that.
No, I'm not afraid of that.
Okay. So let's do this. Let's start a Cliff Central portfolio of cryptocurrency.
Yes.
And Run will run this, and he will make sure that we know what's going on. He'll make all the decisions about what we're buying and selling.
Yeah.
He'll explain why he's doing what he's doing, and we can all hop on the journey.
Yeah, and I'm happy to take recommendations from the listeners. If they want me to invest in something or investigate something to add to the portfolio, happy. Get me on Twitter, CryptoManRun. So I think what we'll do is today, I'll go back, I'll set up this portfolio, and then we'll post it on Twitter, or the website, you guys tell me.
I love it.
Yeah, and then we can check in every now and then, and we can take calls from viewers, from listeners, and ask them what they want to add, or why we should add, or why we should subtract things in the portfolio.
I think that's awesome. Okay, so what are you going to do to start it off? What sort of things are you going to buy to start off with?
So let me set up the portfolio first.
Okay. You'll let us know on Twitter.
Yeah. As I said, the Bitcoin has run a hell of a lot,
uh-huh.
but it's come at the expense of all the other coins. So what people have done is they've sold their other coins to buy Bitcoin. So what I think is going to happen is people are going to realize, hold on a second, now Bitcoin's had this amazing run. We should go back and buy our alternative coins, our altcoins. And so what I'm going to do this afternoon is just have a look at which altcoins got really badly hit and maybe take a nibble of those things. I do have one rule when it comes to buying and selling crypto. I never buy crypto on the way up. I only buy crypto when it starts going down. So I may sit on cash for a while and just wait for the next bit of bad news or what they call in.
And then it'll start to drop. That's when you buy.
Yeah, in the crypto world, they call it FUD. They call it fear, uncertainty, and doubt. So it's FUD. Uh-huh. So I may wait for the next round of FUD and for everyone to panic, sit on my cash. And then when everyone's panicking, then just wait for it all to drop onto my lap.
And you'll show us when you do that on social media.
So I'm going to make a pledge that every time that I make a trade on this portfolio, I'm going to post the portfolio holdings, the balance, and the why. And that way, I think what we can do is we're going to educate all our listeners as to why we do what we do. So it's not just watching someone buying and selling a portfolio.
All right. You can find him on CryptoManRun, CryptoManRun. That's on Twitter, and he's going to start this portfolio. Let's see how it grows.
Awesome. Very exciting.
I'm looking forward to this, yeah.
A little bit nervous.
Well, this is you put your money where your mouth is, right?
Sure.
So let's see how it goes. How's Crypto Trader going? How's the show going?
Show is flying. We get a lot of viewers in South Africa, but more than that, the minute we put our Crypto Trader videos on YouTube, they get thousands and thousands and thousands of views. And ironically, the views aren't coming from South Africa. They're coming from Russia. They're coming from South Korea. They're coming from the US. So it's truly an international show. On that show, we don't really ever talk in rands, and we don't make it a South African show. It's a It's the world's first cryptocurrency investment show, and we feature people and tokens from all around the world.
What do you think of Forbes magazine saying Bitcoin will not replace gold this easily?
I think first of all, the article that they wrote was an amazing article, and I think they put their heads out there. I don't think it's going to be easy, but I think that digital currencies and commodities will replace physical currencies and commodities over time. It's inevitable.
Can you imagine what that'll do to gold, platinum, silver prices?
It's going to kill them.
It's going to kill them, right?
That's called disruption, though.
Yeah.
You know, Harvard Business Review says that once you've been disrupted, you can never come back. So it's almost like they used the case study of Uber and the taxis, and they said, mm-hmm. once Uber disrupted the taxis, the taxis can never come back. Once Netflix disrupted video stores, they could never come back. And I think I think gold and silver are going to be disrupted. I think in quite a cliched way, I think banking is also about to get really disrupted.
A lot of the banks are hedging their bets, though, by opening up their own little internal crypto divisions, right? And their own little think tanks and trying to get the crypto community involved in what they're doing.
They're trying to put the banks on the blockchain. But what they don't understand is that the blockchain is actually to disempower the banks and to disintermediate the banks. So yes, of course, you can put your deeds and you can put your contracts and you can do lending on the blockchain. But you've missed the point. The point is that you want to disintermediate the banks. Now, I met these Argentinian guys who run a wallet, a Bitcoin wallet in the whole of South America. And we spoke the other day and they told me they're starting to do microloans on the blockchain. So I said to them, how does that happen? You know, they say, look, you want to borrow, say, 1,000 rand. So I want to get 1,000 rand.
Uh-huh.
I go onto this blockchain crowdfunding platform from people all around the world who are willing to lend me 1,000 rand.
Right.
They lend me the 1,000 rand. So I said to them, guys, what happens if you don't pay? I mean,
you default.
They said, no, they have this thing called a master lender. So in South Africa, if I lend you 1,000 rand, they have a master lender in South Africa, someone who's willing to vouch for you.
Okay.
And he's willing to underwrite your debt. And so, they created this in the blockchain. Now, what does that do for banks? What do I need a bank for?
You don't need them.
Let me give you another one. There's another company which is taking buildings. Buildings are traditionally very, very, very illiquid assets, right? If you own a building, you can't sell it unless you sell the whole building.
Right.
What if you just need a little bit of money? So they're allowing people to tokenize their building. So they're saying the Discovery building is worth 1,000 Discovery tokens, and every Discovery token owns 1 meter of a Discovery building, let's say.
Right.
And you get one divided by the total number of meters of the rent. And so they're tokenizing buildings and they're making existing buildings completely liquid. Completely liquid.
That's incredible. So you can use that money to grow other things.
Yes. So where are the banks again? Just remind me. So, the irony is we're looking for sponsors for the CNBC show as usual.
Hmm.
And the irony is, when I phone the banks and ask them for sponsorship, I kind of feel bad. Guys, do you want to sponsor?
Because you're going to be talking about their demise.
Exactly.
Yeah. Jesus. All right. I'm excited about this portfolio, man.
Yeah, I'll have it ready for us this afternoon, and I'll put it on Twitter.
And if you want to know more, you can find Run on Twitter, CryptoManRun, and we'll keep an eye on what he does, what he buys, what he sells, all the interesting stuff around crypto. And he'll explain also when there are major events that take place and why he's decided to do certain things. And we can all learn from this. We better get into this because there are going to be a group of people who are pioneering this space already, and you don't want to be left out of it if you're the kind of person like me who likes to be on top of stuff. You want to know what's happening in the world. You want to understand. You want to have conversations with smart people around these things. This is the way to do it, by experiencing it yourself.
If you ignore this, it's like ignoring the internet. It's almost like saying, I'm not going to use email because you can't ignore this.
Love it.
You can't ignore it.
Thank you, Ron.
Cool. Thanks,
Always
guys.
Always good to see you, dude. Thank you very much. Ron Neuner, and you can find him on Twitter, CryptoManRun. All right. And you can watch his CNBC show. It's called Crypto Trader. You'll find out more there. And we'll catch up with him again soon. Do a little update every couple of weeks to make sure that you can hear him as well as see what he's doing. Okay, coming up, Penny Lebiane. She's an absolute institution in South African media. I'm going to find out all about her life, her trials and tribulations. She's had a fascinating career. And this morning, she is our guest. She'll join us to talk about what incredible things have been going on with her. That's coming up next. Turn it up, turn it up, turn it up.
This is CliffCentral.com.